Okay, so today is the 1st of June, 2018, the 18th of Sivan. Tavshin Ayin Ches. Yes, Chai Sivan. And we are, so we're up to Alach HaDei of Perek Chaf Beis. So there is, at the very end of this Perek, even though maybe some of us wanted to talk about the issues of castration of animals, we were outvoted. And we discuss the pasuk that says as follows. The pasuk says, "V'losecha lu eshem kachi." The very end pasuk, "Lamed beis, you shall not be mechallel my name. V'niktashti, and you rather sanctify me besoch b'nei Yisrael, amongst b'nei Yisrael. Ani Hashem mekadeshchem. I am Hashem who is mekadeshchem, who has sanctified, who you will be sanctifying. Okay, Amotzi, who took you out of the land, who sanctified you. Sorry, I took you out of the land of Egypt. V'yoslachem lelukim." So specifically from this pasuk is not the three dinim, the big three cardinal sins, the idea that one would rather than violate avodah zarah, shvichas damim, megillah arayos, rather than violate idol worship, murder, or immoral behavior, so one has to give up their life. That's not actually learned out from this pasuk. Where do we learn out those ideas from? So the fact that those are the big three are learned out really independently, that they are learned out from avodah zarah, is learned out from the very first pasuk of v'haftas Hashem elokecha v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol miyodecha. So the Gemara says, yeah, that you have to love Hashem with all your heart, with all your money. And that's where we make the comment that some people like their money more than themselves, some people like themselves more than their money, so therefore we have to include both, right? So that's the idea, that one has to, rather than violate a avodah zarah, one would have to give up their life. What about the other two? So the idea of shvichas damim, the idea of rather has to give their life rather than kill somebody else, is learned out, it seems, from the Gemara based on a svara. The svara is, why does your what exactly is the language? Rotzeach gufei minalon svara luhuda huda asa l'kami d'rava amarli amari dudai. The governor of my town told me, zil, go kill this person, and if you're not, I will kill you. So amarli rabba said to him, lik taluch, let him kill you, below tikdul, and don't kill anyone. Mi yemer the dama didach su makfei, who says that your blood is redder than his? Dilma dama ahu gavra su makfei, maybe his blood is better than yours. I mean, what gives you a right to kill somebody else? Rather, you should die. Now, what exactly is the lumdus there? So the lumdus probably is, the way we paskin there is, kill you, or else I'm going. Or else I'm going. Kill somebody, or I'm going to kill you. So what are your options? So your options are either go ahead and kill him, or is your option to die yourself, to commit suicide? What if the person says that I'm going to shove you off the building and you're going to kill the person that you land on? And when you land on him, you're then going to survive. Are you permitted to do that, or do you have to give up your life rather than be involved in such a thing? So the answer probably, the way probably Paskin is, no, you can do that. I mean, your real din is you do nothing. Right, your real din is that you have a conflict. Your conflict is you're either going to die or you're going to kill someone else. So what do you do in the case of, when as Rav Schechter called it, a dilemma? A dilemma is when you have two options and neither one is good. So the way you resolve a dilemma sometimes is to do nothing. So in this scenario, Allah is really telling you, do nothing. And then it's up to him. If he wants to kill the other person by throwing you off the roof on top of him, so then that's his prerogative. It's not that you're involved with anything. So that's that halacha. And then finally, the idea of Gilei Raos is learned out based on a Xeris HaKasav, learned out from Rotzeach, that just as you're not allowed to murder, you're also not allowed to be involved in immoral relations. Specifically, the Gemara there is talking about is specifically about the issue of Nara Hamurasa, but really it's to all immoral activities, and that's those are considered the big three. So what then, that has nothing to do with, doesn't really have anything to do with our Pasuk. What is then being learnt out from our Pasuk? So the Pasuk is quoted twice in the Gemara Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin Dalad, one time on Amud Aleph and the second time on Amud Beis. So the first time it's quoted is that they're having some kind of discussion. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yotzedek Nimnu V'gamru Ba'aliyas Beis Nitz Belot. They took a vote and decided and passed in the specific way in Nitza's house in Lod. So there's a sefer called the Margolio Sayam. The Margolio Sayam quotes from the sefer Doros HaRishonim. So the Margolio Sayam is a fascinating book written by Rav.
Yam the Sea?
What?
Yam the Sea?
Pearls of the Sea.
Oh, well, yeah, I got it.
Yeah. So anyways, it was written by someone named Ruve Margolyos. He was clearly an absolute genius. I mean, that he goes through, it's really, Margolyos, the Amazon Masechet Sanhedrin, goes through really line by line, and encyclopedic, the things that he quotes, from things from that people never heard of. How he did this before the age of computers, I have no idea. I mean, an absolute genius. So he quotes from the Sefer Doros HaRishon. Doros HaRishon was written by Rav Yitzhak Halevi Rabinowitz. The one line I saw that caught my eye is that he was involved. He helped Rav Chaim run the Volozhin Yeshiva. Not sure what that means. Was involved in his becoming the Rosh Yeshiva. And Rav Chaim Soloveitchik became the Rosh Yeshiva. There's a whole big controversy there. A very famous story that he got up and I heard it in a little bit of a different way this week. But when Rav Chaim when he got up to give a shir, there was a whole controversy whether he should become or not become, and what?
I said, whoa.
And the way they decided was that he would give a shir, and they would invite a couple of rabbanim to come listen to the shir they would give in front of the yeshiva, and they would decide whether he's in or whether he's out. And he gets up, and he gives the shir, and in the middle, all of a sudden, he stops, and he said, and the way I heard it, the way Rav Schechter tells it over in Nefesh HaRav, is he realized, oh, wait a second, there's a Pirush HaMishnayos in Krisus that seems to contradict what I'm saying, and you know, forget it, my Torah is shver, and he sits down and says, forget it, I'm not going to do this year. The way I heard a little bit differently this week from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson, that someone raised a taina on him, some Talmud said, but what about a Peirush HaMishnayos and Krisus? And he stopped at that point. I'm not sure which one is more impressive, right? That he gave in to this kid who asked the Shaila, or that he realized on his own that there is a Shaila. Both of them, he had the intel, as Rav Schechter writes in Nefesh HaRav in Hebrew letters, intellectual honesty to stop the shir and to give up. And the Rabbanim said, you know what, if someone is willing to put his whole career on the line because of this kasha that none of us were asking, so he's definitely the appropriate one to have the Rosh Yeshiva. But I'm not sure if he was involved with that story or not, but anyways, he's from that era, from the middle of the 1800s. So he just says that this gathering that is being described in this Gemara must have been during a Shas HaShma, during a time of persecution, and they were getting together and figuring out, okay, how should we paskin the Shaila? What should people do when they are confronted by these choices? So the Gemara, they're cut. So what do they decide? If they tell a person you should transgress and not be killed, he should transgress the sin and not allow himself to be killed, except for the big three. So then the Gemara asks, really, Avodas Kochavim not? Right? V'atanya, but Amar Rabbi Yishmael, minayin shim amru lo l'adam, avor Avodas Kochavim v'al teharik. How do we know that if they tell you to violate Avodas Zara and you won't be killed, how do you know that you should violate it and not be killed? Tabalomer v'chay behem. So Rabbi Shmuel is actually passing that Avodah Zarah is included with all the other mitzvahs, that there's no distinction. So Yachal, if you'll be for Hesia, maybe I would think that it even would be in public. Tamalomer velosachal shem kachiv v'nikdashni, quotes our pasuk, that it's only in public that you would violate, that you would not violate Avodah Zarah and rather be killed, but in private you would. So they answer, well, inu da amr k'Rabbi Eliezer. So we actually pass in k'Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, v'haftas Hashem v'kafo v'amchom ashalchom yodecha, and it continues on that path. So Rabbi Shmuel actually holds that it's not true. It's only, even the big three are only a din in public. And we paskin, we end up paskin like Rebbe Eliezer. Then no, the big three are always. And every other din, if an Anjou comes and tells you, put on this shatness garment or else I'm going to kill you, if it's in public, and we'll have to define what in public means in a second, if it's in public, you have to give up your life, but if not, so then you, but if it's not in public, so then you would violate it rather than do the prohibition. Why are you looking at me like...
It's hard to believe.
Okay, so that's what the Gemara comments. So the Gemara then continues on.
Well, why is it hard to believe?
I never heard before that there's an exception.
It's a public or private. Yeah.
So which way is the exception? So Rabbi Shmuel's idea was...
I always thought it was you don't violate these three.
Yeah. The three? Yeah. And then that's it.
Yeah.
Right. So this pasuk is telling you that there is a distinction between private and public. What is that distinction? Right. So Rabbi Shmuel is saying that it only applies in public, And it's unclear whether he's talking about the big three or only Avodah Zarah. That's a machlokas. He only mentioned it by Avodah Zarah, but it might mean all the big three, but probably not. Well, the Matali machlokas, we've shown what Rabbi Shmuel meant. Rabbi Shmuel says the big three are, well, at least Avodah Zarah is only in public and not in private, while everybody else says, no, it's for other mitzvos that we're going to make a distinction between public and private. Now, that's not the end of the story, because it has to be that they're doing it to you in order, because not because they want to benefit from it, but because they want you to violate the din. Right? Thinking about the gravity here, I think what the Doros HaRishonim is really saying here is the people got together, they sat down and said, we're confronted with persecution. What is the best way to maintain the continuation of Klal Yisrael? That was their shaila. Is it that we should keep as many people alive as possible, even though it might mean violating the din? Or does it mean that we should hold true to the din, even though it's going to cost us people? Right? That was the decision that they were making that night in this attic, sitting in load. Think about that next time you land in Ben Gurion Airport.
It would be only in public, arguably for everything. For the big three, because it's all about saying you shall not desecrate my holy name.
Okay.
That it should be a kill Hashem, that it should be a kiddush Hashem.
Right.
So it's only in public that it can be, either a desecration or a...
I mean, you like Rabbi Yishmael's din?
Yes, I
like that. Okay, so that's right. So that's his use of this pasuk. I mean, the other position is that no, those big three isn't based on kiddush Hashem. The big three, you can't violate the big three because they have independent reasons. Because it doesn't make sense to do Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah just can't be done, right? We have Gzeiras HaKasev. You have to love Hashem more than Avodah Zarah, than your own life, and that's what it means. Love Hashem more than your own life means violate. Die rather than violate Avodah Zarah. It had nothing to do with Kiddush Hashem. Well, obviously it would lead to a Kiddush Hashem, but it's not based on this pasuk. The same thing with the other ones. You can't kill somebody even if it means saving your own life. It's just, the Svara doesn't work. It's not about Kiddush Hashem and not. So the Kiddush Hashem has to teach you something. What is that? So it suggests the Gemara, it really has to do with the other mitzvahs. So the Gemara actually continues on. It says, That even a light mitzvah, so to speak, what would that light mitzvah, I'll actually give an example in a second, you would have to violate. So even, that would be, I forget if that would be, it sounds like even if it's not in public. And then, Kiyasa Ravin Amar Rabbi Yochanan Afilu Shul, even if it's not a Shas HaShmad Lo Amar El Betzinav, but for Hesya Afilu Mitzvah Kal Yarek Val Yavar, right? Even if it's not a time of Shas HaShmad, and it's not a time of persecution, if they publicly come and make you violate a din, now, obviously that means that it's probably something close to a time of persecution, so I'm hard to see how this would work anywhere else, but that's where it quotes Yehorek Val Yavar. So then it says, what is a mitzvah kala? So Amarav Abar Rav Yitzchak Amarav Afil L'Shenuye Arkasa D'Masana, even if it means changing your shoelace, that apparently the Jews had some specific way of changing their tying their shoes or doing their knot or the color of their shoelaces, and if it means changing that, so that would even require a person to give their life rather than that. So there are, the Pisrei Tshuva on Shulchan Aruch just points out and says, well, hold on a second, it's only if they're trying to get you to do it in order so that you not be Jewish anymore. I mean, they're trying to wipe out that din. What if they say, everybody in the army has to wear this uniform, or everybody in the office has to wear this uniform, right? And the person says, hey, I'm Jewish, I can't change my clothing and wear a doctor's outfit because you say so, right? More than 10 people are going to see me. Do I have to maintain my Jewish dress rather than that? So that's what the Pesach Yeshuva says. No, that's not what it means. Right? It means that they're specifically trying to get you to be like non-Jews. If there's an other reason why they are trying to get you to do it, so then not only is it not Yehorek Val Yavor, but it's mutter, right? That's permissible to change one's clothing. That itself is a little bit of a machlokas out there, which is why there are many Jews that don't change their dress and have not changed their dress for a couple hundred years. But right, but nevertheless, that is the that seems to be the psak. And the Gemara goes on and quotes this pasuk one more time. Am v'chein v'farhesi am Rabbi Yochan, Rabbi Yaakov am Rabbi Yochan, ein farhesi b'chusa. And how do we know? What is parhesia? What does it mean 10 people? So ein farhesi b'chusa me'asar b'nei adam. There's only 10 people. Parhesia is only when it's more than 10 people. So the Gemara says, Pshita Yisrael and Be'inan, and obviously we require it to be Jews. Yisrael. The Kiddush Hashem isn't towards the non-Jews, the Kiddush Hashem is towards the Jews. And what about if it's nine Jews and one non-Jew? So Tashma, the Tani Rabbi Yana Yachud Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Asya Toch Toch Ksiv Hachet says V'niktashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael, I'll be sanctified amongst B'nei Yisrael. And it says over there, He Badlu Mitoch Ha'ida Hazos, separate from this Ida, separate from this Ida Hazos. What is that talking about? What Ida was that referring to? So that's the Ida of Korach. So Moshe is told, separate from this Eda, separate from this group, just as there was 10 people, so to here is 10 people. So the Torah Tumima says, whoa, time out, woo-hoo. Who said the Eda Korach was 10 people? What are you talking about? Eda Korach was hundreds of people. All right, what's it talking about? So the Torah Tumima... What? By the way, yes, this pasuk is also used to teach the halachos of a minyan, but that wasn't, no one voted that should be able to be discussed. But this pasuk is quoted as the source that a minyan is 10 people or more. So the Torah Tumima says, well, wait a second, we're missing the main part of the drasha, right? How do we get 10 people? So he says, drasha zu tzricha hashlam. This drasha requires completeness. We don't see anywhere in Parshas Korach that we're talking about 10 people. But Tzarek Lahosev, so you have to add on. Ve'ein Eda Pachusa Me'asar. How do you know that an Eda is no less than 10 people? Kedeksiv Parshas Hamaraglim Ad Masai Le'eda Harahazos. How long are we going to be amongst this evil people, this evil community? And we know how many Maraglim are considered bad Maraglim? 10. So that's really where we're getting 10 people from. That's coming from there. So the Torah Tumim then gets into a little bit of...
How about with when Abraham was arguing with, negotiating
10
with Hashem?
Say 10.
Yes, very good. So the Gemara comments, so the Torah Tumim comments that there is a Yerushalmi. Actually, he doesn't quote that, then he quotes a different din, where it says, V'nikta Shibasoch B'nei Yisrael, and it says here B'nei Yisrael, and it says over there in Parshas Miketz, Vayavo B'nei Yisrael B'soch HaBayim, that the B'nei Yisrael came in amongst those other ones that were coming in. Just as there are 10 people, so over here is 10 people. What are we talking about, B'nei Yisrael and Parshas Miketz? What story is that referring to?
Miketz is itself, isn't that the dedication?
No, Miketz, at the end of Vereshis. Good. Where do we see 10 people? The 10 B'nai Yisrael. How many sons were sent down by Yaakov, right? 10 sons. So the Yerushalmi, rather than learning it out from this din, learns it out from that din. Yaakov sent down 10 sons. They're referred to as B'nai Yisrael. The Torah Tumima says, why is the Yerushalmi's drasha better than this drasha? He says, well, this drasha is two steps. Right, this takes you, Betoch takes you to Korach, and then Korach sends you to Shlach. That's a two-step drasha.
Wait, so Mikesh takes you to Korach?
No. Our parsha, V'nikdashti Besoch, right, the language of Besoch takes you to Korach, He badlu Misoch Ha'eda Hazos, separate from this nation, and then the word Eda there takes you to Shlach to tell you that an Eda is referred to with 10 people. So it's a two-step process. So to me, it suggests that's that Yerushalmi didn't appreciate this this drasha so much.
So Shlach is where the story of Korach.
Yeah.
Shlach
is next week's parsha. Parsha's Hamaraglim. The spies.
Shlach
lecha anashi.
There goes the whole story. At least considered why.
No, Shlach. The parsha Shlach. Shlach lecha anashi. B'shalach is in Shmos. Shlach is in Bamidbar.
Okay.
Was Maraglim set themselves in a way apart from everybody else? And Korach, they're going the opposite way. Everybody's like, why are you telling me?
Yes.
It's like the...
So the Torah Tumima actually then raises another interesting question. He says, so we just learned from this Gemara that what does it mean to be Bifarhesia? What does it mean to be in public? So Zarathustra says, well, in front of 10 people. That's what we're learning after this Gemara. So Zarathustra scratched his head and brings like 7 makoros to say, well, we also see other things are considered befarhesia. He says, number one, the idea of the chalitza. Chalitza, the Gemara tells us, should be in front of 5 people because it needs to be befarhesia. Yeah. Then, of course, a couple of other things that need to be in front, that need to be in public, and refers to in front of 3 people. Right. So, for instance, what's an example of something needs to be in front of 3 people? What? Benching, yes. Although benching it might be a different thing, but basin. Well, basin is also what you need to have a vote, right? Basin, yes. But I'm not sure if benching is based on the din of farhesia or not. But a classic din, I think we spoke about this here before, certainly spoke about it with Rabbi Greenspan, is the idea of Lashon Hara. Right? For Lashon Hara, the Gemara tells us that if something was said in front of 3 people, you're allowed to repeat it. It's supposed to assume that everybody knows it already. Now, there's some details to that. It's not so simple as, oh, now I can just say Lashon Hara was said in front of 3 people. Right? It's you're allowed to assume people know it already. So you're not allowed to say it directly, but you're allowed to refer to it. So, for instance, there's some scandal in the Jewish community, and I feel the need to speak about it in shul, so it was already in the newspaper, so I could assume people know about it, and I could talk about it in the drasha and shul, right? Not necessarily because I want to speak, because I want to bring a lesson out from it. So if I could, want to use that as an example for something else, right? So I could assume that people know that example already. Oh, yeah. That's what that Gemara, well, right, it's about a 3 machlok. But anyways, if it was said in front of 3 people, I could assume that it's for hesed. So the Torah Tzvi asks, why is it that for some things for hesed means 10 people, and for something it requires 3 people? So he said it depends what the issue is. If it's something about Nikdashi B'Soch B'nei Yisrael, if I'm referring to B'nei Yisrael as a whole, right? A sanctity of B'nai Yisrael in front of all of B'nai Yisrael. So what is considered a representative of all of B'nai Yisrael? For that you need 10 people. If it's about an individual being known, something about a specific person being known, for that you need 3 people. Right? There's a difference. 10 people assume that everybody knows it, or at least it's a representative of all of Klal Yisrael. 3 people is about the individual. That's the chiluk that the Torah to me makes. I'm sure other people raise this question and make other distinctions. That's interesting. So, and he says, well, what about chalitza? Chalitza's 5. Where do we get that from? So first he shrugs his shoulders and says, I don't know. But then he says, well, maybe it's because chalitza is really, there's 2 witnesses and 3 people to share it or something. The 3 people are the public listening, and two of people don't count towards that count. But anyways, so that's the issue of parhesia, 10 versus 3. What else should we discuss? I really just wrote down a couple of random thoughts about this issue. So there is there's an interesting Piskei Tshuva that quotes from the Shvus Yaakov. Who is the Shvus Yaakov? So Shvus Yaakov, or Yaakov Reicher. He is also the author of the Iyun Yaakov, not the Ein Yaakov. Well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but the Iyun Yaakov, which is a commentary on the Ein Yaakov. He was known as the greatest posuk in Europe. Him along with the Chavos Yair of Yair Bakrak. Those were the 2 great posukim in Europe in the early 1700s. So that's pre Vilna Gaon. Right, pre-Nod de Behuda even, right? That period is quoted regularly in the Sefer, in the Piskei Tshuva, the commentary on the Gemara. So he, the Piskei Tshuva, quotes the Shvus Yaakov as asking, well, what about if you have the opportunity to escape? Right, so we have a mitzvah here of Nikdashti B'Soch B'nei Yisrael. So let's say I know that the next day people are going to come and put a gun to my head and say, either do a Avodah Zarah or else we're going to kill you. So should I escape or should I look to fulfill the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? Right, so you go ahead and do that. So he says, no, you should run away if you can. He says, Umiksasin Yechol Inverach, are you obligated to run away in order to save yourself? Or maybe we should say that no, you shouldn't separate from the Tzibor, you should be most of yourself along with them. And he answers, Veheshiv, that even from the Tosim, that we see there's a story of Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah. Who are they? Who are Hananya, Mishael, and Azariah?
They're the one who went to Babel, didn't bow down to the
statue of Nebuchadnezzar, right, and rather were thrown into a fiery furnace.
Right, right.
Now, it's a little iffy there, but that wasn't really a Avodah Zarah that they were being told to do. Right. It also seems like they had the opportunity to leave. I mean, they came and discussed it with Daniel before leaving, before getting in trouble. And they went ahead and did it anyways. So he comments that, you see, they could have, that even though they could have run away, that would have been a chumrah. And what they did by not running away was a chumrah. But a person does have the right to run away rather than be mekadesh shem shemayim.
So what happened?
Well, they were thrown into a fiery furnace and they survived.
Like,
that's the story in Daniel, yeah. Okay. And then there is another issue here that's quoted, that talked about in the Piscatchua. We also saw that it was quoted in the Margolio Sayam. The Gemara says 10 people, right? 10 people makes it Befarhesia. So first of all, do the 10 people have to be there? Right? Does it mean, oh, if this thing done in front of 10 people, that's a that's when you should go ahead and do it. That's when you should die. But if it's not in front of 10 people, it doesn't. It's not considered Befarhesia. So the Shach says absolutely not. It means if 10 people are going to know about it. And I'll bring you an exact proof from that Gemara. The very Gemara goes on to say, what about Esther? Right? Why was Esther allowed to go and seduce Achashverosh by the Esther Befarhesia Havei? The Gemara says, what did Esther do to Befarhesia? So Shach says, well, wait a second. Esther wasn't going to do the act Befarhesia. It means that she was going to live Befarhesia. People would know what was going on. So Shach says that that's considered enough. If 10 people will find out. So who qualifies for those 10 people? So the Piskei Tshuva, so the Gemara itself said, well, what about if one of them is a non-Jew? No, that doesn't work. Well, what about, says the Piskei Tshuva, what about if you have 9 people that are going to find out, and then there's the victim? Right? Does the victim count to the minion? Right?
It sounds like
it's a bit of a... Yes, it's a bit of a, I mean, it's a bit of a humorous question for us living in this period. But these were serious Lamaisa Shilas that people are dealing with. Right? Does the victim count as one of the 10? So, also he asks, what about women, right? If the whole idea is, we're learning out from this pasuk of an Eidah, so the Eidah, when we use that pasuk to teach you about a minion for davening, it's talking about 10 Jewish males above bar mitzvah. So, is that same, are those same rules going to apply here? And then he adds in another one I saw in the Piskei Tshuva. Would Gerim count? Why would I think Gerim wouldn't count? So Gerim certainly count towards a minion. But why would I think Gerim wouldn't count? Because Gerim sometimes are not included in Bnei Yisrael. Or I shouldn't say that. The Gemara sometimes raises the question, why does, you know, sometimes the Pasuk will tell us, and we've had this a few times in Vayikra, right? This is going to apply to you and to all those amongst you, including the Gerim. The Gerim also this will apply to. Why would I think it wouldn't apply to the Gerim? So Gemara has to come up with some reason as to, oh, they wouldn't have been included there. So the Piskei Tshuva says, well, there is a time when it talks about Bnei Yisrael and it doesn't include Gerim. The Gemara asks, how do we know that we should include Gerim? Oh, well, it figures out some lima to say that you should include Gerim in that as well. So what does that tell you? That means that they're not really included in Bnei Yisrael. He suggests to me they're not included in Bnei Yisrael here either. And they wouldn't count towards the 10. So all of those are questions that are raised. I don't think he gives an answer.
The only time they're not included is when they were giving portion of the land.
No, so I think lahalacha they're never excluded, but there are many times in the Gemara where it has to figure out why they're included. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not excluded from any halacha. The only, but the Gemara needs to prove that, or feels the need to prove that on a regular basis for many mitzvahs. Says, and how do I know that Gemara included? Well, it throws it in. Well,
they wouldn't say including Gemara if there weren't instances where Gabriel were not included. I mean,
well, that's the question. Right. So, to my knowledge, there's nothing lahalacha that they're not included.
Right, but there must have been some where they wouldn't say that.
Well, when they gave out,
it's a question. You got to find what it is. Then
when they gave to and they came to Eretz Israel, and they gave out land. The Gerim didn't get land because they didn't have the lineage.
Yeah, but that's not a din of them being Gerim. That's a din of them not having parents.
Right,
but that's a technical. That's a technicality. Yeah. You only get land if you have a father, right? Who's a Jew, you had the right lineage.
What? They're included in everything.
But it's not a mitzvah to get a portion of land in the land of Israel.
So when aren't they included then?
Because there's a technical reason why they're not included.
But when aren't they included? According to this, he said there's some instances when they're not included in the
Bnei Yisrael. No, Gemara, they're not included in the word Bnei Yisrael, to the point that the Gemara feels the need to figure out another way to prove that they're included. I said, there's not, to my knowledge, any mitzvah that we say, oh, it only applies to Jews and doesn't apply to non-Jews. Even though there are many times where the Gemara feels the need to prove that Gerim are included in the mitzvah. What is that pattern? When is it the Gemara feels compelled to do that? I don't have an answer. I don't know if anybody's ever figured out an answer to that question. Right, the Gemara just does it sometimes, and you have to figure out why that is.
That's an interesting point. Why it's...
Yeah. One other...
Because we have lists of like women and children and gay room and avoid slaves. I mean, there are different categories of people.
Yes.
They're clearly a different category, but they're included in all the mitzvahs that you just...
Right, so they are included in all the mitzvahs. Sometimes it's just assumed, well, they're Jews. If they're a Jew, they're a Jew. And sometimes we have to prove that they're in. Well, what the pattern is to that, I'm not sure. It looks like we're out of time. Okay, so stop here. Mishnah Shem Disalachos should be talked about in the base medrash and not have to be considered the mitzvah.